Hi, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to another segment of The Kelly Joe Show, a production of the Institute for Native Arts and Media, a 501c3 nonprofit organization based in Norman, Oklahoma. The views and opinions expressed in this segment are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the INAM organization. Thanks so much for tuning in. It is my great pleasure to have Dennis the Pawnee Express Knife Chief in the hot seat. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm did all hey. I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so as a fellow Pawnee citizen, I got to tell you how proud I am of you and your upcoming bouts. And we're gonna talk about that a little bit later. But I'm glad to have this time with you because I've always wanted to kind of sit down and hear your story. And I know that one of your goals is to encourage Native youth and to encourage them to follow their own path. And so I want to start by talking a little bit about you and how the Pawnee Express got on his track.
Oh, yes, I'd love to. And thank you again. Thank you for having me. And of course, real quick, I gotta give a shout out to all my sponsors, all the ones that support me in my dream and my vision, the ones who stood by my side, and then the ones who've just, you know, recently got on, you know, with the Pawnee Express train, you know. So we got Leader LLC, you know, that's my mom and my grandma's Indian Tribal Self-Governance. That's their own business that they run. And they help other tribes become sovereign in business management, all of that. They're amazing. And then I got Comanche Construction LLC. That will be Patrick McClung. He's been with me for a few years, and man, it's seriously helped me out tremendously. And Inspire Med Spa. I got my cousin Sarah Knife Chief. She's great. She helps me with my ankle injury that she helped. She's an orthopedic surgeon. And she helped me with my ankle, with my injuries as well. And then I have Off the Cob Media. That's Bronson Trey Harjo. He has a media company to where he's going to be doing a promo video for me for my upcoming fight. We'll be filming that in February. So thank you, Bronson Trey Harjo and Sierra Rivas. And that's Riker Six Killer. And Kickapoo Casino, you know, they've been with me for about 5 years, you know, and it's been a journey. And every time I ask for help, they're, you know, no hesitation. They're there to help me. And it's just it's just so encouraging to me to have all that help. And then we got Factor Nation Remodel, you know, that's Chris Factor. He's from Shawnee, Oklahoma. He's been supporting me in my boxing career forever. I fought, you know, I've been able to fight out of state, you know, all around the country. And he's even made it to them fights. And he's just a great man. And he has a great daughter. And he's been through a lot. And, you know, it's just amazing to have all this support. And it's just, it's a blessing, you know. And I feel like I'm missing another sponsor, but it's even a blessing to have all these sponsors and to even have to remember all of them, you know. It's just, the support is amazing, so thank you for that. And I just wanted to give a shout out to y'all, you know, because without that support, you know, this pro boxing, it costs to train. It costs the time, you know, doing two-a-days, you know, 5 days a week, and then going to go train out of state, all of that. So just wanted to thank all the sponsors and thank you, you know, Kelly, for having me on once again. And yeah, so, you know, my story to help the youth, the Native youth, you know, they got a special place in my jigsaw, you know, in my heart, because I've been through it, you know. I've been through all the struggles, More, you know, more so than some, you know, or less than some, you know, who knows? Everybody has their own story, you know, and especially us as Indigenous peoples, you know, we're native to this land, you know, and that's why, you know, our last interview, you know, with AIA, American Indian Association Club, you know, that's why I'm a part of that group as well, is because I'm sick of being the second class citizen in our own nation and on our own lands. You know, this is our land. This is, we're the original caretakers. And before colonization, our Chadiks, our people were good. We were Dirahe. You know, we had community. We had, you know, we had family that was there to help each other constantly, every day, community, community. Now it's just divide. It's all divided. You own this, there's fences, everybody's separated. But I feel like what our ancestors did, you know, and the negotiating that they even did for us, you know, up until the water and the grass stops growing, you know, we're going to receive these benefits or these treaties that they had, you know. So I'm thankful for them, and I'm just trying to live the way my ancestors did in this colonial world the best way possible, you know, because I feel like I owe it to them, and I owe it to our people that are here today physically, you know, and that's my vision, is to inspire the youth, you know, with the things that I'm trying to do. I want them to know that they're capable of that as well, you know, and it's just anything's possible, you know, like, why not? Why can't this Indian kid from Pawnee Rez be a world champion? You know, why can't this Indian kid from the Pawnee Rez go out and do amazing things, travel the world and do great things for his Akitaru, for his tribe, for his family, for others, you know, even if it's not our people, you know, we could still do good for others, you know, and give them, let them empathize with us with our struggles, you know, because it's important, you know, and there's just so much to talk about. There's just so much. I'm you don't want me to start off like with my journey or how I
would. Let's talk about how you got into boxing, because okay. I know that historically natives box, like natives can fight. Like my own grandpa was a Golden Gloves champion in the Air Force. And yes. So I mean, we're just tough people, and we like to get it on. So let's talk about how you became a professional boxer. Like what was it that made you realize that this boxing was your dream?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, you know, like in order for me to tell that side, I got to do a little summary of how it became that way. So my whole life, you know, my dad wasn't there and it hurt, you know, and I was just a kid trying to make it. My mother was there, you know, she's great, an amazing woman, you know, but I didn't have a father figure, you know, and I missed out on that. So this is what I heard, a statistic, whenever I was a real little guy, real young, and I heard that every person that doesn't have a father or both their parents in their lives, they end up in jail, they end up here, they're a bad life. And I was like, okay, that's me then. So I just took it on and ran with it, and I got in trouble. I was lost, you know, but I found sports. So I was always an all-around athlete. I could play basketball, football, baseball. I was in seventh grade, I was jumping off the walls, doing flips, you know, I breakdanced, I did everything. I was just very athletic. And I always, you know, you grow up on the res, you grow up with natives, you know, they're going to pick on you. Your uncles are going to pick on you. They're going to tease you. They're going to make you tough, you know, and my brother as well, you know, he's a year older than me. He made me tough, you know. I used to hate his guts when I was a kid, but now I just love him to death, you know, and like all the things that I went through throughout my life, you know, brought me to where I am at today. And, you know, just a tough growing up. My mom always kept us away from that, but I always wanted to be a part of it. I always wanted to go to Pawnee. I always wanted to go to powwows. I always wanted to go hang out with my uncles and my cousins, you know, and they would tease me. They would pick on me, but I don't know. It's weird. It's just the way I was brought up, and I loved it, you know, and I have them memories today, you know, and it feels good to know that they, you know, I was just able to deal with that and still love my Aki daughter, my family, my tribe. And so, yeah, what got me into boxing, man, it started when I was 23. But all up until that point, when I was 16, I got in trouble and I got sent off for a year. And then I got out. Then at 18, I had a drinking problem, you know, and I abused it, and drug problem, you know, all that baloney. And at 18, I got tore up, you know, drunk too much and caught 3 felonies, you know, and then I was facing a lot of time, and I thought I was done with that. And then it's crazy, you know, I had a 5-year suspended, and then a month before that ended, I slipped up again and I caught a felony. I spit on officer, and then they offered me drug court. And then I did good on that. I basically completed the whole thing. And then I completed the whole thing. Everything was good. And then a month later, I mess up again, you know, and I think 23, around 24 after my boxing career, you know, and I messed up on that. But anyway, so I had all these problems. I always knew I had potential. My mom, I always loved to work out. Even while I was acting up, I always did push-ups. I just loved staying fit, you know. I just loved being athletic. I loved moving. I loved being agile. So, yeah, whenever I turned pro, no amateur fights. I worked at a tire shop at like 22, and there's this big white guy, Jodic Saka guy, you know, big buff guy. He's from Texas. He's like 6'4". And I was like, dang, this guy, he's kind of intimidating, you know. He looked big and just solid, you know. And then I guess he's from Texas, and his name was Josh, you know, and shout out to him, because if it wasn't for him, he got me into this sport, you know. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be boxing probably, you know. So he told me he's an amateur boxer, and I was like, oh, cool. And I'd always watch the UFC fights, whatever. I'm like, man, I bet you I could do that. And I was always known as a tough kid, you know, and nobody wanted to fight me, but I wanted to see what I was really made of, you know. I wanted to see what I was made of against the best. So he's like, yeah, bro, I could get you an amateur fight. I was like, all right, sweet. So I started training with Lee Woodward out of Shawnee. He's a Thunder Boxing. Shout out to you too, Lee. You know, it's Vernon Woodward. I call him Vernon, but on his social media, it's Lee Woodward. But anyways, he, you know, he helped me with that too. But he was training. Josh took me to the gym and introduced me to Vernon Woodward. And he was like, said that there's a, we could get me ready for an amateur fight in a few months. And then all of a sudden, like after 2 weeks of training, you know, there's an all native pro boxing card at First Council Casino. And I forgot where it's at. But anyways, Comanche Boy was the main event. And anyways, he asked me, he's like, do you want to fight? I get you a win, I get you paid. And what's a 23-year-old kid gonna say to that? You know, I'm just like, yeah, okay, win and payday, let's go. So I just went straight pro, you know. It was dumb, you know, and definitely whenever I open up a gym, I'm not gonna let that happen to my fighters, but it's just the way it worked out, you know. And so I jumped in there as a pro. I sparred once before that fight, and yeah, I went in there, I lost the decision, and against a guy with experience. And then the second fight, I got a third round knockout. I faced a guy with 30 pro fights. And that second fight, I faced a guy, like I said, with 30 pro fights. And I was scared. I wanted to leave. I didn't even want to be there. Like, I wanted to just leave. And I asked myself, I was like, what if I did leave? You know, I was sick to my stomach and all that. And I was like, what if I did leave? How could I show myself to everyone else? I was like, all right, I'm fighting. I can't do that, you know? So I go in there, get a third round knockout. I knock him out in the third round. The rest is history, you know, 26 pro fights later. You know, I've got to fight all around the country. I was a champion in over here in Oklahoma. I beat everybody out here, you know, for 3 years. I was reigning as a junior middleweight champion at 154. And then I felt like I had to take my talents elsewhere, you know, to become a world champion, you know. So I've been lucky to fight in Atlantic City, my very first fight outside of Oklahoma. I got to go to the pinnacle place of boxing, Atlantic City. It was wild. Went up in weight and fought their champion at 160. I went from 154 to 160, and then he was 4 pounds over. He's at 164. I was like, forget it, let's just go. And I learned a lot. And that fight, I had him hurt in the fourth round. And I had him on the canvas and almost had him knocked out. I never hit the floor. I was winning that whole fight, but it went to a decision. He survived that good shot that I got him with, and they gave it to him. But one thing I did, I was upset at that. But one thing I knew is that I belong. You know, I knew I belong. Like, it's crazy.
Let's talk. I mean, you said something earlier. You said, I wouldn't do that again. Let's talk about that and a little bit of advice that you would give to boxers, whether they're 23 or whether they're 13 or, you know, whatever age. Let's talk about why you wouldn't just go straight to that, right? Like, what would some of the decisions that you would reconsider now, like, what would you do differently rather than like jumping to pro? Would you have gone a couple, would you have sparred a little bit more, or what path would you have, how would you have changed that initial part?
Yes, I'd change it tremendously. It'd be a big change. I would have definitely probably would have sparred. I would have had at least 15, 20 amateur fights, you know, I'd say about 20 amateur fights or more before I turn pro, because in the amateur system, you'll be novice. You'll be 10 fights and under. You'll be fighting people, kids that are 10 fights and under, you know, the same experience. But after 10 fights, you can go to open. So you're from novice and 10 fights to open, you're fighting kids that have 100, 150 amateur fights. And this could be my 11th fight, and I could face a kid with 100 amateur fights. So I would have experienced that. I would have done 20 amateur fights so that I could see what it looked like, what that level of boxing is, you know, from a kid that only has 10 fights to a kid that has 100 fights. There's a big difference. There's levels to this game, and it's real, you know. Like, I've seen people get beat up, like, get outworked and get whooped, get put down, that was 50 pounds heavier than them. And the kid that had more experience, that was 50 pounds lighter, would put the big man down in boxing, because it's just a whole nother game. It's the sweet science. But I definitely would have had at least 20 amateur fights. And I had that experience, because experience is everything, you know. You get the jitters, you get nerves, you're going in there initially, you're going to get hit, you know? So like, it's a scary feeling sometimes, you know, like in the beginning of my career, it was really scary. Like, I used to hate sparring. I hated it because I'd always get beat up, you know, like I didn't know, you know, I'd give one and take three, you know, I didn't know defense. I was just all go, all offense, you know. And the thing that I would teach the kids is patience, you know, and that it's not a sprint. It's a marathon, and you got to gradually learn. You gotta have the building blocks of becoming an elite fighter, of becoming a world champion, whatever you want to succeed in that, you know. And the thing that I love about boxing is that it reciprocates life, you know. It transitions into your life, because whenever you go in that ring, you could be training for a certain fighter, a certain style, and he could change the whole game. He could switch it up, and you're like, oh, he's southpaw now. You know, oh, okay, so I need to slip his jab and come to the body, or I need to wash my feet more. Or if they catch me, you know, if they catch me with a clean shot and I'm hurt, okay, I got to readjust. Same way with life, you know, life will hit you randomly. You'll have a, like with these speaking engagements sometimes that I have, you know, it'll be a certain way and then it'll switch up on me real quick, but I have to adjust, you know. I have to be composed and relaxed, and same way in that fight, you know, like if you're all tense, you're going to get tired. If you're relaxed, you're going to be quicker. You're going to be able to think sharper. You're going to be able to move. So it's just, man, it's something else. I love this sport. I love it. It changed my life, and it's something else. 10 years, you know, 10 years I've been a pro, you know, no amateur fights. Normally kids that go in pro, they have 200 amateur fights, 100 amateur fights, 50, 20, whatever. But it was meant to be, is how I see it, you know. And this is the reason why I went through that, is so that whenever I become a coach, I can tell these kids, you know, and it will hold weight because I've been through it, you know.
Let's talk about just the sheer joy of hitting something. And I'm talking about like a heavy bag. I'm talking about a speed bag. I'm just talking about just being able to hit something. I mean, let's talk about being able to put that into therapy and put that into a way of a mental health coping mechanism.
Yeah. It's like I say, that's another way it changed my life. You know, ever since, before I get to that, I got to get to this. Ever since I started fighting professionally, ever since I started boxing, I've never been into a street fight. Before that, I was acting up, fighting everybody. And once I got into boxing, it showed me discipline. Once I had that therapy of hitting a bag, of going in there, punching somebody, them punching me back, and humbling. In the beginning, you know, at the beginning, I was getting humbled.
That'll do it, won't it?
Yeah, because the bag, it don't hit back. But once you get it far, you start getting, oh man, hey, this guy cut his. You get a timeout, you know, but there's no timeouts until that. So, yeah, it's a great outlet. Because, you know, you think about it, too. This is why I think it's really helped me and made me, it's made me such a happy person, you know, and it's helped me to face my emotions and not be insecure about it. It's just shown me so much confidence, you know, because I could feel any type of way, but I know it's going to be okay, you know. I know that's human nature, that you're going to feel these feelings. And if they make you sad or mad or glad or whatever, it is what it is. But I can control my reaction to it, you know. And in the same sense with boxing, somebody comes at me and they got a good right hand, I can control by moving over to the left or staying out of their range of line, you know. And I could fix that. Every problem, there's a solution. But yeah, hitting the bag, man, it's amazing. I love it. It just you're just sitting there, boom, boom, boom. You're getting tired, you're getting exhausted, you're getting fatigued. You're punching, but you keep going. You're rah, rah, rah. And then you think about, you know, whenever people blow up, it's like, rah, they're. And whenever I blew up, you know, sometimes I blow up. Sometimes I'll scream in my car, you know. And, you know, sometimes I'll do that, or sometimes I'll just hit the air or something, you know. Now I do it in a healthy way. Before, I'd go drink, I'd go be stupid, and then it would come out, you know, or in a wrong way, in a negative way. So yeah, it's great. it's great. I get to go hit somebody and not go to jail. No, I'm fine.
That's why I'd do it.
I mean, it's crazy. Like, in Pawnees, you know, we had warrior societies, you know, we had lance societies, we had, we had warriors that would stab that lance to the ground, tie themselves and say, I'm there to fight to death. Every time I get in that ring, that's how I feel, because I am putting my life on the line. You're going 8 rounds with a guy with 8 ounce, 10 ounce gloves, you're getting hit in the head. You know, it's real, you know, it's, I've had injuries, I've had concussions, and it's real, you know, and but you have to respect it. You know, people say you can play basketball, football, baseball, but you can't play boxing. You can't, because it's life or death really in there. But to me though, it's the ultimate way of living. When I get in there and I got that crowd, I got people screaming at me, I got a hostile crowd, or I got people that are cheering for me. You know, I have to deal with all them emotions. I have to deal with the guy that I'm facing. He may have this many wins with this many knockouts. I have to address it and go at it in a strategic way so that I don't get hurt, you know. And it's just amazing. It's the ultimate way of living to me, because, like, you're in there, you're putting it all on the line, and everybody's watching. And then on top of that, you got all that craziness happening, and you have to be relaxed. You got to be chill. You got to be, all right, this isn't just another day. It's crazy. Before I walk to that ring, all up until I get, so we have a fight, say it's scheduled at 9, the commission wants us to be there at 5. It's all kind of cool, but honestly, it's all slow motion to me. It's all slow motion. It's all just little flashes. It's kind of like a dream. And then you hear about Mike Tyson, whenever he said he's walking to the ring, he's like, I was afraid of this man. I'm scared of this man. You know, he's thought of beating me. This guy might be the guy to beat me, you know. And then I step into the ring, I'm a god. And so, like, in that sense, I kind of feel that way, but with another side. Like, so everything's slow motion to me. Everything's slow motion to me up until I get into that ring. And then once I'm staring, the ref gives us instructions, and I'm like, I've been thinking about this dude for 2 months, 3 months, whatever, however long it is. And I'm finally here, you know, I'm finally here in my head, and it's crazy, but it's still slow motion. And then he'll say, go to your corner, and it's slow motion still. And then my coach will give me a little shot of water and tell me a couple instructions, then ding, boom, fast pace. Everything's the dream, the slow motion, it all stops. It's just real time. Boom, boom. Okay, this guy's trying to come at me. Boom. Okay. Oh, he's trying to come at me. Or no, he's chilling there. He's trying to see what I'm doing. Okay, that's cool. So now I'm gonna see if he bites on that feint, you know, and I'm gonna throw a jab. You know, then it's just real time, you know. It's just it's exhilarating, dude. I'm getting pumped up just thinking about it, you know. And I've been out for 15 months because of a couple injuries, and I stayed patient. You know, the doctor told me to wait 6 months, but I stayed safe and waited a year and a half. And I focused on my school, on my schooling. I focused on other things, my culture, like ceremonies, the Earth Lodge, you know, helped build that. And then this acting, you know, I want something that's going to keep my blood pumping, you know. And after boxing, acting, you know, I've noticed that may be my next calling, you know. It's seeming like it's calling my name, you know, and these gigs are happening, and I got to be a part of Reservation Dogs, just a little clip, you know, and then I got to be a part of Echo. And then I got this movie that we'll be filming at the end of this year. It's called The Unbound, and it's about Lenape indigenous peoples and during the French and Indian War with Kyle Kawiki Harris. He actually has he has that movie Out of Exile coming out. So I'm able to work with all these great actors, these great directors, writers. And it's just, it looks like God's plan, you know, God's setting things up for me. And I'm just, you know, I always put on my hashtags, I'm just trying to be great. And that's the truth. Like, I'm just trying, you know, I'm trying. I'm not saying I'm great. I know that some great things have happened in my life. I know that there was instances where it was great, and I do feel like I'm on the path to greatness. And I feel like I'll never catch it. I don't know. Maybe I'll feel like I've caught it whenever I'm an old man and I can't walk around physically and I can tell my grandkids. But until then, I always want to have something to shoot for. You know, if I'm just doing my best.
Well, thank you so much. Now, when is your next bout?
Next bout. I'm so excited. I got the contract in today, too. I got to print it off. And me and my family are going to review it. And it's March 18th at the Oklahoma City Convention Center out here in Oklahoma. Since 2018, I've been fighting all around the country, but I'm able to make my comeback at home in Oklahoma and OKC versus Vincent Cato.
How do we get tickets?
All right. So on the tickets, I will have them posted on my social media. So just follow me, Dennis Knife Chief. And then on Instagram, it'll be Real Dennis Knife Chief. So Facebook is just Dennis Knife Chief and Dennis Aponte Express Knife Chief. I'll be keeping everybody updated. I'll have shirts and tickets.
Yay. Well, I can't wait to have a shirt. I'm so excited for you. And it's like I said, I'm so proud of our Pawnee people when they follow their dreams and they stay the course in spite of all of the obstacles that we find in our way. Congratulations to you. And it's like I said, I hope to talk to you very soon. And for folks who want to attend that fight on March 18th here in Oklahoma City, make sure that you follow Dennis on social media and he'll have all of the details right there. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of The Kelly Joe Show. Distributed by the Institute for Native Arts and Media. The views and opinions expressed in this segment are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the INAM organization. Thanks so much. We'll catch you back here on the next segment. Have a great day.